Welcome to our live session, Introduction to our Fluent Design System. Okay. Thank you. I'm guessing most of you caught the keynote this morning and you heard Joe introduce the Fluent Design System. He spent a little bit of time giving some top-level ideas, and we have about 60 minutes, an hour together to get into the details. Before we get started, I'll introduce myself first, and then I'll pass it over to Paul. My name is Bojana Ostojić. I am one of the design directors in the Windows organization. I've been with Microsoft for some time, over 18 years. I worked in MSN some long time ago, worked in Windows OS and Shell, spent some time in entertainment with Media Center and Connected TV. I also worked in office labs and communications. And most recently, I spent some time working in holographic space on HoloLens and shipped it last year, actually, at this event, our version one. And now, in the recent time, Paul and I have been joined at the hip working on the Fluent Design System. And we like to joke that if it wasn't for the difference in our eye color, people have a hard time telling us apart. We spend so much time together. So. For me, the most important thing for this whole time I've been working at Microsoft has been focusing on user experience. I worked both in the design side of the house as well as engineering, but nonetheless, user experience has always been my passion. Coming at it from the function side, understanding really what's at the heart of the matter, what do people really care about and want to solve, what are the problems they have, and also from the more form-giving function and emotional side, how do you connect users to the applications and experiences in a way that they actually lose themselves in those experiences. And like I said, joined here with Paul. Do you want to take a few minutes to introduce yourself?
My name is Paul Gasmarino. I work on the user experience platform. I've also been at Microsoft for 15 years and spent the first half of my career working on the user experience of the shell and Windows itself, hitting my head up against the platform, wanting to do more and not being able to do all the great stuff we wanted to do. And so spent the second half of my career working on the platform with an awesome group of people trying to create things like the Fluent Design System. And so really excited to get to share with you all today.
All right. So what can you guys expect from this next 60 minutes that we spend together? We're first going to take a quick look at why should this matter to you? You know, what's behind the Fluent Design System? This is something I spent quite a bit of time thinking about, and I want to share with you some of the insights that we have and some of the ramifications that you as developers and makers community should be aware of and care about. Then we'll actually spend bulk of the time of the session in looking at the examples that are being built into the platform. Paul is going to take us through these innovations. We're going to look at some of the Wave 1 elements that are going to be available shortly for you to use, and also some of the new things that are coming up in Wave 2 and around the corner some months from now, some interesting explorations that continue to evolve the design system. We will also spend a little bit of time looking at how the investments around documentation and tools are kind of completing this comprehensive design system. And finally, before we part, we want to talk a little bit about where you go from here, both in the course of this event today and tomorrow, what other sessions are worthwhile checking out, and also what happens after the event. Okay, so that's our 60 minutes together, and we'll start off, like I said, with the why behind the work of the Fluent Design System. So why is this evolution necessary at this point in time? You know, why is it important? Why is it happening now? And then probably even more importantly in the context of today, why is it of importance to you, the developer community? You know, what's in it for you? Why should you care? So let's step just a bit back. The world is changing in many ways, but of relevance for us today, let's talk about how the computing world is changing today. There are two forces that are interesting that we should take a look at. One has to do with the fourth technological revolution, if you will, so-called the era of ubiquitous computing, the expansion of the playground upon which we play and live and work and create. And then the other interesting force is this idea of creativity being revisited. Our imagination is taking off. Actually, the very playground that's expanding, it's motivating and inspiring us to think of new scenarios that we really hadn't thought of before. And these two really work nicely in concert together. They push and pull on each other, informing each other and coming up with new opportunities. So with that in mind, what does it mean to build applications and experiences that people will love and want to use applications and experiences that will unlock creativity for both you as makers and builders of applications, but also for the end user who will then use those applications to curate creations of their own. So let's start with this era of ubiquitous computing. I don't know if you guys know, but this term was coined some time ago, about 30 years ago, by a former CTO of Xerox, Mark Weiser, who even back then foresaw that we would come to this point in time where such saturation of technology and availability of devices, all of them being interconnected, it's all around us, effectively receding into the background of our lives and putting the human at the center and this technology in the service of that human. And we definitely are witnessing this change around us with the saturation of technology. I would say we're still in chapter zero. We're still uncomfortable. It's kind of a nascent time. And here are a couple of things to kind of consider in the new era of ubiquitous computing. If we start with the very familiar characters that you all know, this is your 2D or flat screen devices, anywhere from the wrist watches to the laptops and phones to TVs and PlayStations, we're seeing proliferation of devices even within that 2D space. We're seeing more small form factors as well as large form factors show up. But beyond that, we're seeing also on the 3D side, no screens, or if you will, we're reimagining the screens. So between HoloLens and the immersive devices, we're having either real environments around us be the screens or virtual environments be the screens. On the other side of the spectrum, there is also this 0D idea where there is no screens, we have headless devices. We have sensors that are either embedded in environments or objects or devices themselves. So here you have a playground that's expanded. These are the variety of devices that people get to use and we get to build applications for. Alongside these devices are also inputs that are important to pay attention to. Here are some of the familiar ones between mouse and keyboard and touch. But also now we're seeing proliferation of voice across the full spectrum. Voice is actually a unique type that can lend itself to 0D, 2D, and 3D. That's its strength. And in addition to voice, there is also renaissance of the pen. You saw Joe speak this morning a little bit about the use of ink and importance of that to Windows. We're seeing some new accessories like Dial for Surface Studio, and then on the holographic side, some new accessories that were even announced today. There's gesture and gaze on the holographic side, and then also presence as an interesting input on this playground. Alongside these inputs are also analogous outputs. So you can imagine that beyond just the visual screen feedback that we're used to, we're now seeing sound as an output, haptics, light, environments themselves. So here you have it. This is like our new playground upon which we get to play. This is what users live with. So it's no longer this one single device that we get to be focused on, like the question of what's your primary device you're building for. That's been retired. This is the new context. And you can imagine what kind of opportunities this opens up as well as challenges. One of the ideas I was recently thinking about, because I spent time in holographic, it's we need to reimagine the idea of a button in the holographic space. So think of the affordances and the context and the intent and the interaction that is informing even something as simple as a button across the full spectrum of devices and inputs. Okay, so you can certainly appreciate the complexity of that playground. In addition to it being complex and as interesting as it is, there is ways in which we actually use these devices that is changing as well. So we're seeing concurrent, continuous, and interchangeable use, which is to say, we often switch back and forth between devices. You saw some of this morning. Lorraine did a great job with the story remix showing how you move between the laptop and a phone. You start your task in one place, you end it in the other. Sometimes we actually shift back and forth really quickly in kind of a concurrent and interchangeable ways. And Microsoft Graph is an interesting logic and data supportive technology, but we have to think about it from the UX perspective as well and ensure that interactions and inputs are also something that we have rationalized. In addition to all that, we also have a multi-user situation where the complexity only grows that much more. And this is something that we can see both happening in work and school and in play. So the playground's expanding. We have to ensure our platform supports it and is providing capabilities and does the heavy lifting for you. So in addition to that, now let's take a look at what's happening with this creativity as it's being redefined. We've heard it a little bit in the Sasha's keynote, and Terry also spoke about it. The importance of creativity, really, one way to think about it, it's kind of like a new productivity, but it's elevated in a sense that it brings expression and meaning to what we do on a daily basis. We have this need to create, actually, Terry mentioned this morning. It's just one of these very fundamental human needs that we uniquely have. So the user expectations alongside of that are also growing and informing the types of applications and experiences that I would like to see with these technological advancements. So let's take a look at a couple of notions on this side. Democratization of creativity. The term really is suggesting that you don't really have to go to a creative school to be creative anymore. Here's an example of a Snapchat. This is a couple of Snapchats from my niece, Anya, back in my home country of Croatia. What's interesting about this is that in 19 years that I've known her, this is a crazy data point, we have never spoken on the phone. I mean, it's kind of like, sounds weird, but it's not because we don't like each other. She sends me these probably 20 or 30 times a day. She doesn't scribe or she doesn't talk in her communication. She mostly relies on visuals and stories to communicate what she wants to communicate, either with her family or her friends. And then in addition to that, there is this user-generated content idea that's popping left and right, and even I have succumbed to it. I created my own Bitmoji, and I have to admit, this is something I use way more than I'd like to throughout the day with my friends and coworkers, and certainly I get them back just the same. So this is one part of the imagination taken off, but let's take it further too. Rich immersive apps is what people want. This has been reserved for gaming space, and now we're seeing it more and more move into the creativity and productivity beyond gaming. Whether it's playful expressions, is it data visualization, is it the management of calendar organization of your desktop? In all of those cases, people really want to have rich and immersive experiences. And beyond that, they also want to have sensory experiences where they fully feel like they're part of the experience and they're fully participating. Again, across work and play and school. So these two forces, on one side we have playground expanding, opening up opportunities, we have imagination taking off in creating new experiences. So to follow suit, we need to think of what kind of a design system do we need to meet the needs of that kind of a world. So today we're sharing with you the very first step in this journey, in our Fluent journey. And we're going from flat design language that you guys will remember for the last 10 years, moving into the immersive multidimensional one. We're going from small screen and touch to now appreciate the full range of devices and input types. And we're moving beyond just consumption and communication into also creativity and curation. So let me kick it off. Yeah, you saw that this morning, so I thought I'd offer it one more time. Very excited about our Fluent design system and the five main building blocks, light, depth, motion, material, and scale, all coming together in concert to provide us with these necessary ingredients and qualities that we want in order to achieve the richness and the immersion, and also something that works across this complex world of devices and inputs. So let me quickly go through each one of them before I pass it over to Paul for some very specific examples that will bring to life these particular building blocks. So first, let's start with light. You've seen it this morning. On the function side, even just within the holographic space, is something that helps us orient, as basic as that. You know, reflecting your gaze back is something that light can help us with. Even in the headless space, if you think about headless devices space, that is where the signal and the handshake happen through a visual cue, so light comes in very handy. Beyond just function, if we look at more on a form and emotional side, light certainly has a very specific mood that it creates. It's something that makes you feel like you're moving fluidly through your experience. It has a kind of ephemeral, ethereal quality, and it's something that we know, especially with Generation Z, there is more and more of that need, especially to feel immersed in the experience. The next one is depth. So the first one that comes to mind is just visual depth, but there's also spatial sound that takes advantage of depth too. Again, inspired by the holographic and immersive space, but also gaming. In gaming, it's in particular important for the sake of participation and, again, immersion. How can depth help us potentially solve some old problems in new ways when we bring it to the existing 2D flat screens and devices? And then also, you know, I was thinking how we have two axes to date, and now this is the third one. That's like 50% increase in capacity to actually start creatively solving problems. And another thing is that it doesn't just help us organize and focus when you think of depth. It also creates opportunity to establish certain relationships and meaning that perhaps we couldn't do without the Z-axis. Then we have motion. What to say about motion? It's what makes us feel good. It's something that just looks great and breathes life into everything that we do. It establishes context as well. It helps imply a relationship between things as you move from one piece of UI to the next. If you move from content to content, it kind of gives you that continuity of experience and a dynamic feel. Then we have material, something that also has been explored a lot in the holographic space. It has to do with really wanting to touch and feel things. It brings warmth, it has texture, it has emotion that it kind of breeds into a personality of a system, and it also helps establish visual hierarchy. And then finally, scale. It's been said a lot, but it's now beyond just the 2D devices. We have to think about how do we create adaptive, responsive, intelligent UIs that are spanning across this whole ecosystem of device and inputs types that I described. So to bring it all together here, with Fluent Design System, we're looking to unlock everybody's creativity by enabling immersive and multidimensional experiences that adapt and respond to multiple devices and inputs. And I'm going to hand it over to Paul, who is going to walk us through wave one of specific investments that we're making in this space. Those are in the works and will be available in short order. They're already being employed by our first-party apps. Windows Next apps are employing them. UWP apps in Office are employing them. And also we'll take a look at some of the wave two investments and explorations that are happening that will be coming in the months from now. Over to you,
Thanks,
Paul.
Thank you. Let's switch over to me, yeah, seven. Thanks. Hi, so thank you, Bo. So before I actually go into what's new in this first wave, I did want to point out, as Bo mentioned, if you're a Windows Insider, you may have already be starting to see a bunch of Fluent Design because a bunch of apps have started adopting these first wave and are already shipping out to Windows Insiders. And even if you're not a Windows Insider and you haven't been seeing them yet, you might, let's get that PowerPoint clicking. You might be seeing the press, and you know, we're pretty flattered and humbled to start to see just some of the things people are saying already, just with these very first flights of these apps that have been going out. So we're all really excited about that. I don't know if any of the people who wrote any of these things are in the room, but thanks. You know, the reason that you're starting to see these things is that we're taking a very different approach with Fluent Design and how we bring that to life compared to how we've done design systems in the past at Microsoft. We're bringing this to life through a series of waves. We're incubating ideas. We're developing technologies and validating them through apps and experiences and then bringing them to scale through the platform. And this really means that all the things you as developers get in this first wave of Neon and in subsequent waves of Fluent Design have not just gone through lab tests, but real-world telemetry and real-world usage by millions and millions of people. And we really want to try, we want to learn, we want to work with all of you to get to the best possible design system for all of us to meet this world of computing that Bo so eloquently talked about. So let's dig into some of the specific innovations and things that are available in this first wave of Fluent Design. I want to start with what we call Reveal Highlight, which is a new interaction visualization that uses that notion of light that Bo talked about. Does anyone know what this is? This is a, we call this a red line. This is showing all the different interactive visual states of the button control today. So if you hover over a button, if you press down on a button, if you move keyboard focus onto a button. And one of the things you'll notice is that all these states today are binary. On, off, hover, not hover. This fundamental interaction model, you see this everywhere. It's not just buttons, but toolbars and menus and hyperlinks and every interactive element almost you encounter today on any system has this binary interaction model that's largely unchanged since the dawn of the graphical user interface. Now consider for a moment the world of mixed reality. Imagine you put on one of the Windows mixed reality headsets that were described this morning to watch a 360 video, such as the Emmy Award-winning film Invasion from Baobab. Maybe you're using gaze input. Maybe you're using a Sixtoff controller. However you're doing it, how do you know what the UI is that you can interact with versus what's just part of the 3D environment? How do you know specifically what you're about to go click on? That's where Reveal Highlight comes in. See that glow that shows while you're interacting? See that border that illuminates to show the specific element that you're about to click? With Fluent Design, we're bringing this fundamentally more natural, more beautiful, light-based interaction model to the entire matrix of devices and inputs as a new fundamental interaction visualization. And so let's do a little demo of that with the wonderful, one of my favorite apps, but I just love math. The calculator. How many of you have played with this already? The calculator with Reveal. It's really fun. All right, so here we go. Here's the calculator app. And I'm actually going to, I don't know if you guys know about, you can, there's this thing called Magnifier, WinKey Plus, and you can zoom in. So it's kind of fun to see it this way. And I'm just going to move my mouse here. Now, see how as I move my mouse around, there's kind of the borders of like, here I'm on 8, but you see how the borders of 9, 5, and 6 are kind of lighting up a little bit? There's this kind of illumination that emanates around. So there's a very clear interaction of the thing you're about to go click. Like, it's very clear I'm about to go click on 9, but as I'm moving close to other buttons and things, just the borders reveal themselves. And here, these are very clear borders that are revealing themselves, but if I move up, there's also sometimes buttons and UIs that are not so clear. So like the M keys are a little bit more, you know, hidden there, but as you approach them, you kind of start to see that as it comes up. And so that's really what Reveal Highlight is about. It's about revealing hidden borders and UI elements and using light as an interaction method to help people discover how to use a UI and just enjoy using it better. It's not just about hover, but it also has a visualization with you click. So I'm going to click with the mouse, and you'll see there's kind of a little light pulse that emanates. That's true with touch as well. Also has a keyboard version. So here, I'm going to hit the minus one. I'm going to, let's see here. There we go. I'm going to hit, whoops, plus. And so you kind of see there's a kind of illumination that happens when you do that. It's also really great with pen. You know, the hardware team makes these beautiful devices like the Surface Studio here and these great pens. And we would like to make software that's worthy of running on these beautiful devices. And so here, one of the things about the Windows Pen, you know, is as you get close to the screen, it actually detects that you're approaching it. So it actually has a little bit of hover. And so you can actually enjoy that kind of illumination as you're getting close to the buttons kind of before you click on them. So it's just really nice integrated kind of interaction model that works with all the different inputs, the keyboard, the mouse, touch, pen, in this really natural, you know, wonderful way. And so that's Reveal Highlight. And let me talk a little bit more about it. That was a demo of it with the great calculator app using it. Here's the People app. It's another app using it. Common controls like list views and grid views have built-in support for Reveal, making it very easy for you to get this very sophisticated interaction visualization in your apps. So here's people, and you can see both a list and a grid type of scenario making use of it. It's really applicable in a very broad range of scenarios where you have grids and lists and other groups of content. Here's a start kind of case. Again, there's different interaction visualizations with different inputs. So if you tap, you get that kind of luminescence, that light that emanates. It's even smart about rich gestures. Like if you long press, like you might do to get a context menu or to start a drag and drop operation, there's an undulation kind of light that comes out of that. So it's a very comprehensive interaction visualization model that works with all the different sets of gestures and inputs and controls you might want to do. And not only is it built into the controls of the platform, but it's layered in architecture in a way that makes it easy for you to start adopting it, even in custom controls you may have written. And so I'm very excited to be able to show, I think this is the first time we're showing the OneNote app from the Office team using Fluent Design. And this is real code. This is a screen grab of their actual app. And they've updated their ribbon control, which is a custom control they have, to use Reveal in this very beautiful way. And so it's very straightforward for app developers who have custom controls to also start to adopt this visualization, in addition to using the built-in controls that have it. This is another app from the Office team, the Mail app. And it's great. This is a really sophisticated application. I know a lot of people at Build make sophisticated business applications, a lot of complex content, rich content. So it's great to see that there. Here's the Mail app in the dark theme. I know some people like light theme, some people like dark theme. It works great in all these different themes and colors and personalities you might have. And it's just a really great new interaction visualization that uses light, Reveal Highlight. And something you might see in this screen here of the Mail app that I haven't talked to yet, but it's kind of been an elephant in the room, is the way that sunset beautifully illuminates and comes through that pane on the left. And that brings me to the next feature I want to talk about, which is acrylic material. And this is a new feature that uses that material kind of design concept that Bo talked about earlier. To see that, let's look at the calculator app again. Look at the background of the calculator. Once I activate it and I drag the window around on the screen, again, you see how the light and the colors from the desktop illuminate the surface from behind. And I just want to be clear, that's not just transparency. It's not just blur, even. There's something far more sophisticated and beautiful and natural going on here. To contextualize acrylic material, think about the way people design experiences today for PCs, for mobile, for web. We all basically just use some color palette. This is a very nice color palette. This is the Windows. This is the Fluent Design color palette. It's beautiful. It's a very rich palette. But with Fluent Design, we asked ourselves, what if the creative palette we built our experiences on was not just solid colors, but was materials, visual building blocks that adapt and react to their context, just like surfaces in the real world do? Would that allow us to create more engaging, more natural experiences that are delightful on our 2D devices as well as in mixed reality worlds? And materials, when I talk about this, we're not talking about some pre-canned images that someone made and just started gluing onto places. These are effects graphs and sophisticated computer graphics techniques that usually are reserved for the world of gaming and video production. And with Fluent Design, we wanted to unlock these for you and make them available easily for a whole ecosystem of apps to benefit from and use. And we're really excited about this. In this first wave, we're introducing what we call kind of the first material, acrylic, that you can use. It's very simple and flexible. And it kind of has a dark and a light manifestation, supports a bunch of opacities and tints. And I want to be clear, it's not some special sauce where Microsoft is just using this for our window borders or something like that. We're actually giving this to you, for you to use to build your apps and your UIs in the ways that are great in the context of your actual experience. It's not about the system's experience, it's about your experience. And it's a very rich thing. It has not just many layers of background and Gaussian blurs and exclusion blends and color tints and overlays and these tiled noise textures. So there's a lot of visual richness to what's going on here. It also has a lot of policies built into it. So when you use it, we'll guarantee a lot of things like the right accessibility and power and user settings being respected and that kind of stuff. In terms of how you apply it, here's another great app. The apps team has made Voice Recorder. I don't know if you've ever played with this, but I really find it useful. Sometimes when I'm preparing for a presentation, I'll make little voice notes for myself. Anyway, this shows how you can use acrylic to create visual hierarchy in a really great way in an app, in a really beautiful way. It's very common to use acrylic for navigation chromes, or if you have multiple panes, you can use different levels of opacity for the different panes, as you see here. This is the alarms app using acrylic. And they're using in the panes on the top and the bottom there, the commands. And I think this does a really great job of showing the sense of dimensionality that it creates and the way that users' personalization can shine through. They've used the user's accent color to tint this app. The desktop background the user picked is shining through here. So really, acrylic allows you to create experiences of the personality of the user, and the user's preferences come through in a great way as well. And by the way, these are all real shipping code, these things I'm showing, which is just fantastic. Not only can you compose acrylic with the background of the system, but you can compose it to create layers within your application. So here's the Maps app, also video of real code, is using it to be able to extend their map edge to edge within the application so that it can take up all the space, and yet they can still have UI in Chrome that's still legible and easy to use, but in this nicely layered way. This is another app, the Xbox app for PC. And so I want to thank them for letting us show this screenshot. It's also the first time this is being shown. And this is a great example of how fluent design and acrylic material can help really sophisticated apps with lots of panes of content to them. Sometimes you just can't fit all the things on the screen. Even on a large screen, people build very sophisticated applications, have lots of content and things in them. And you sometimes have to have layering and panes and things that overlap. And acrylic and materials and fluent design help you do that in a way that's much more harmonious and integrated and seamless with the rest of the experience. So as that pane kind of came in there that you see on the left. And it's not just when you have a lot of content on your screens, but maybe your app is running on a TV, on an Xbox. This is the Groove app running on Xbox. And in that case, when you have a 10-foot experience, you have to make all your UI quite big so people can see it from far away. And so you don't have that much screen real estate, actually. And so it's another case you have to do more layering in the app. And things like acrylic help you do that. Here's a picture from Edge of how they're going to use acrylic in the tabs area. It's kind of fun. You can click on that little arrow and peekaboo. You can see the thumbnails there. One point I want to make about this is the team did a usability study on this, a small one with users on campus. But people reacted to this. And they said, oh, wow, this feels so modern. This feels so fresh. It feels like there's something new and great going on here, but I can't put my finger on it. And that's one of the things that we think is true about fluent design and a lot of these innovations is it just creates this feeling that you have, this emotional reaction as a user that you like it, that it feels more modern and fresh and personal and great, even though it's subtle and it's nuanced, and that's intentional, because we want it to be something that you can enjoy using day in, day out, all the time for core experiences, things like the web browser that you have on your screen like all the time. And it's great for ephemeral experiences. So if you have an experience you're trying to create where you want to be something that you kind of lightweight and go use and then get back to other actions and other activities you're doing, acrylic is a great tool that you now have for the cases like that. And this is showing a concept of how that might be applied here. You'll find that all the common controls are updated to make use of and work on acrylic in the right way. We spend a lot of time paying attention to things like legibility and contrast ratios to make sure that if you just follow the guidelines and use it in a natural way, you'll have a really great experience for customers of your apps. And all these policies are built into it that I mentioned. So here's the calendar app, also using fluent design and acrylic. We're really excited about it. And here's just running in a windowed state, and so that acrylic is on the left pane there is showing up. But let's say you're in tablet mode, or you're running the app in some case where there's nothing that makes sense to blend with in terms of the background. Then acrylic will automatically adapt to that as a material, to that context. It'll solidify. You still have this kind of subtle noise layer and kind of feeling to it, so it's not just like a boring gray, but it adapts in a wonderful way. Also, for power, or if you're running over RDP sessions or a bunch of cases where maybe it's just not the right user experience trade-off to have something that might be a little bit more GPU intensive like acrylic going on, it'll automatically also adapt. So all this is kind of built into the policies. And the best way to take advantage of it all is, of course, using controls. I'll talk about the control sample gallery later, but this is showing the navigation view. It's one of the new controls that we're shipping that really highlights both acrylic and reveal in a really wonderful way, and you should really consider using that to have a great, consistent navigation experience that shows off fluent design and takes advantage of it. I also like the fun little spring-like physical kind of motion. So if as you navigate, you might see this little blue line kind of here, wait for it to happen again. Because I love this. I call it the rubber band. I don't know what we should call it, but And it also gives you that, which brings me to the next topic, which is all about motion and connected animations, which is another feature of fluent design, this first wave. When we think about how you navigate today using apps and experiences in general on all devices, it really still feels like it did in the 90s with websites. It's hard breaks every time you go from screen to screen to screen. So if on this app here, imagine I clicked on that Magic Lessons icon in the upper right, and it just kind of went into it. That's how it feels today in apps when you navigate around in websites. Now imagine with connected animations, you get an experience like this. It's very literally fluent, dare I say it. You have that continuity as it's almost cinematic. I'm going to try and play that again. Let's see. Here, I'm going to go to my computer, and I'm going to actually scrub it in slow motion for you, because I think it's worth enjoying that way. All right, so I can see it here. So let's just see all that's going on while we do that. And you can see there's an element, that element's moving, but there's also other choreographed animations and things that happen with that. And that's all the kind of stuff you can do with the platform. And just getting started with it is very simple with the new connected animation services that we're providing, and just really let you make these experiences that are just phenomenal. The apps team is making great use of this in their app. Here's the Photos app they're shown today. And so it was very, you saw how it brought you into that experience. When you clicked on the photo, it did that connected animation. What I think is really cool about it is I'm going to continue clicking on in the app, and maybe I'm going to go do something with this photo. And then when I go back to the main view, it also has a connected animation backwards. So they both work forwards and backwards. And I think that's terrific because it recontextualizes you. Sometimes in an application, you kind of go up a level, and that's when you get lost. And so connected animations are useful not just when you're drilling in, but also when you're drilling out to recontextualize you. And so that's just a really great job they did with that there. Here's a very sophisticated UI also in the Photos app, where you're taking a story and you're wanting to go edit it, and look at that beautiful connected animation as they go from one screen to the other. I think actually the more sophisticated your UIs are and the more complex they are, the more they benefit from having this kind of detail and attention paid to them. That's why we're investing so much in helping you do that. So next I want to talk about what we call conscious controls. And rather than one specific feature, it's more like a category of features and investments that we've been making. We all know about responsive design. Responsive design is when you, as you resize a window or move it around, it adapts and relays stuff out. And we've really been thinking about what's the next step in that direction. What if UI wasn't just responsive, but it was conscious? It was taking into account your intent, what you were trying to do, what you meant to do with the UI. And what if we could have controls that adapted to that better? And I want to show just two quick examples of that. The first one is going to be here, is just the humble little scroll bar. And it's a small improvement, but I think it really paints this picture about what's going on with conscious UI. And so I'm sure we've all run into the case where we've have windows where the content doesn't always fit, and traditionally you get a scroll bar that shows up. So when I move my mouse over here, you'd see a whole big scroll bar. Or if I was using a trackpad and had moved my mouse there. With conscious scroll bars, they really only show up when you just go right to the edge where you need it. And especially if you think about cases where you have multiple panes of UI. So if I go into this, for example, I might have multiple panes here, and so I have a pane here, and I have a pane here. You don't want like a million scroll bars showing up on your screen just as you're moving your mouse around. It's really distracting. And if you think about the new input modalities people are using, they're using precision touchpads where you can do gestures directly on the touchpad. They're using touchscreens. I know not everyone in the industry has touchscreens on their computers, but we do. And we think that's really good. And so we want to help people really make the most use of that and enjoy that. That's conscious scroll bars. Just one, again, it's a small change, but it shows this kind of trend in this direction of making things that scale, that idea of scale that was talked about with Fluent. And another thing that falls into that bucket is, and I think you've seen this in the keynote as well, this idea of text boxes being conscious to how you're interacting with them. If you went and used a pen to go tap into a text box, let me handwrite directly into that text box. And so I think you're going to see a set of features in this upcoming release and more features where controls and UI is conscious of how you're trying to use it, what you're trying to do with it, and adapts not just kind of retroactively, but proactively. And then finally, I want to end with perspective parallax, and that's this idea of depth that's been talked about with fluent design and how we can help you achieve that. And if you think about different levels of depth in the real world, things that are farther away from you kind of move slower, and things that are closer to you move faster from your point of view. And if you can create UIs that have that sense of depth to them with techniques like parallax, it's more engaging. It draws someone into the experience more. They feel like more natural. They feel like they're really immersed in it. And so this is a simple kind of example of how parallax could be used that I think people have thought of. But I want to show a really cool additional usage of it. This is the Groove app has a really cool new feature where you can tell it the artists that you like, and then it'll make recommendations for you. It's an awesome new feature. And they're making great use of parallax in this experience. So after they've rated these items, see as they scroll, it's not just very giant things parallaxing, but actually each individual little image there is parallaxing. So if you look at the hearts relative to the content behind there, it's a very subtle and beautiful effect that they're making use of this technology to do. And it really creates that just that je ne sais quoi, that little subtle thing, but you're more immersed, you're more engaged with the experience. And people can take it even farther and do even richer experiences, as you see here with this store experience. So that's kind of what's in wave one. These are all just different little ingredients of it. But what's really powerful is to see how they all come together into end-to-end experiences that users get. And the apps team made this fantastic video that I wanted to show you of these are all real code apps. These are just screen grabs of the real apps, of real code they're shipping to you using the platform that show how this all comes together. And I wanted to show it for you right now. Those are fantastic. And if you go to the fourth floor north lobby, the apps team has a booth where you can go and check these all out. And you should definitely go and play with them, because there's nothing like experiencing them firsthand to really let you see how wonderful these experiences are. So that's kind of what's going on in this first wave. But I said that Fluent Design is coming out as a series of waves. And so I thought it'd be appropriate to kind of invite you to join us on what's coming up next, and how can we get your feedback and your input and your participation in all that. So I wanted to show just a couple of things from Next Wave Thinking, just to get kind of the brain juices flowing. And the first one is 360 media playback. And something else we think about when we think about depth is film and 360 video, and what we're working through is how can we have an experience that's common for you. There's great support already for 360 video, and if you use the Movies and TV app, you can go check those out directly. But what about as a platform? What about as a design system for everyone? So we've been working through an experience where you might be able to click on a standard media player and go and get a great experience for playing 360 video with all the right UI affordances that would support both going into full screen mode, so we can be fully immersed on a 2D device. But you might think about, what happens if I take that app and I run it in a mixed reality environment? Well, that same UWP app should run, and you should be able to have that same full screen or full app experience play, and you should be able to go truly fully immersive, because you're in a truly immersive environment. And so you'll be seeing a sample coming out soon that shows you how to do that. And that's one of the areas where we're innovating on. And it shows, again, that kind of cycle of joint innovation we're trying to do across apps and platform and all of you. And if you go to the talks later today, you'll see that we'll start to show you some of the lower level APIs that we're exposing kind of under the hoods that aren't as pulled together as a design system level thing, but start to give you capabilities to do these sorts of things that we'd love for you to play with and give us feedback on and be part of helping us define fluent design. Another one I want to show you is conscious headers. And this is a screen grab from the Groove app that makes use of this feature. Again, it's that idea of conscious controls. And I might click to start it. And so you see as you start panning, it kind of resizes and rearranges that UI. This is actually pretty hard to do on a large screen. If you think about all you have to think about to rearrange a UI like that, where's focus go, what elements stay, what elements go. It's not just like hiding something off screen when you scrolled it, like you might do on a small phone screen, maybe. On a large screen, there's a lot more UI, and so there's a lot more stuff to coordinate and think about. And so they've done a great, great job with this concept and think about how can we make this easy for everyone to do. And there's a whole kind of list of other topics, speech, Z-depth layering. I'm not going to show anything now, but as a plug, if you come to the 2:30 talk James Clark and I are giving, we might show a cool demo of where some stuff might be going there. Spatial sound that Bo mentioned. So there's a bunch of other ideas kind of in the pipeline we're starting to think about, and we really want to hear from you, about your needs and things as we do this together. All right, and so now I want to talk about how do you get started with all this stuff. I showed you some of the cool stuff available, and I wanted to start this by just doing this slide here that I really like. This slide, we'll see if you like it too. But today I know that a lot of developers, when Microsoft has a new design system, they're excited about it, but it might feel a little bit like this. Sorry, I had to cut it off before the drum beats. it's awe-inspiring, it's beautiful, but it can be a little daunting. How do I get started? What do I do to start having this awesome, kind of experience and start to be able to leverage this for me and my customers? And so we've really been thinking about, as we take each step with the design system, how can we have the right platform, the right guidelines, the right tools, the right samples, the right community to help you and help all of us together get there and create this amazing ecosystem, this amazing design system. And so I want to show you some of those things. There's terrific platform support for everything you're seeing here. There's tons of new controls and high-level building blocks that you can use that exemplify and build in this fluent design system. And there, below them, there's tons of composition APIs and platform APIs and input APIs and framework APIs that sustain and enable all this. And so there's a lot you can come and learn about the sessions later today, the session at 2:30 James and I have, the session after that Tim and Ashish have. We'll talk about the sessions in a minute, but there's a lot of great platform support for this. There's also terrific new guidelines. And so just this morning, we launched a whole new site, a whole new dev portal site with the design guidelines. And I wanted to show it to you because we're very excited about it. And the team's been working really hard to bring this to you. And so here it is. And you can see, you can kind of, there's a header. We can kind of learn about all the different topics that, we've been talking about today, parallax, reveal, acrylic, content animation, so forth. And when you go into the articles, they're fantastic. They have design guidelines. We brought together design guidelines and dev guidelines in a really comprehensive way. In the past, I think we've had separate, everyone's had separate design guidelines, separate dev guidelines, and it's hard to connect the dots. And so here you'll see our articles are filled with imagery and guidance and tips and tricks, and also go into the code of how to do those things. They, detailed things like usability and adaptability, but here's the resources you can use, and here's, how easy. It's just like applying a color. Super easy to apply acrylic to things. And samples and so forth. And so you'll see just all these rich articles that you can take advantage of. And the other aspect about this system is that we also want to welcome your contributions to it. So you can actually, there's an edit button here now. And so if you think that there's something we should say differently or better, you have a better idea of how to explain something or something we should be giving guidance on or standardizing, come in, click edit, and come participate in the process, and we'll review that and fold it in the right way. And so we're kind of really excited about the new design guidelines site, and you should definitely come and check that out as developers. This will really help you. All right. Also, samples. People tell us, oh, we see these great things. Can you give us better samples? And so we're launching a new XAML controls gallery sample that has all the controls and these new building blocks like acrylic and reveal and so forth all in it that you can use. And these are all the high-level kind of things you just kind of like put together and make your app with this Fluent Design. And for those who want to dig under the covers, there's also a fantastic Windows UI Dev Labs sample. Got to move my focus back onto the PowerPoint slide, and then you can get it. And you should check that out as well. That's available actually on GitHub today. And stick around for some of the later talks to learn more about those. And then tools. You know, there's the great edit and live edit and continue work that's been done with Visual Studio. And that's super relevant when you're trying to work with these dynamic applications, these Fluent design system applications. Because if you think about an animation or something like acrylic, you really want to debug it and edit it and review it in real time with what's it like on the specific background it's on right now, in the specific animation state it's in right now. And so Live Edit and Continue lets you do that. Here you see editing the opacity of an acrylic, for example, and while it's really running, which is great. Pardon me. But we know there's a lot more than just dev tools. People really want great design tools. And so we're very excited today to be launching a whole new set of design kits for Fluent Design. That work with all the popular programs that you use to design your experiences, Photoshop and Illustrator and classic tools like that, but also new generation of tools like Adobe XD. And Adobe's actually here. They've been a great partner. They built a Adobe XD is a UWP app. We're super excited about that. And they have a theater session. You can go learn more about it. But what this is showing here, this video, is how you can actually quickly prototype a Fluent Design System style app with those things like acrylic, with those new controls in Adobe XD, and I'm going to kind of zip through it using the design toolkits that we're shipping. And it has everything in them. There's new the fonts, the Sago MDL font with over 1,000 icons is now available for you to use, which is fantastic. The type ramps, colors palettes, you know, all the new controls, like this new ratings control. And I think they've got that in the kit as well, as we'll see later here in the video. So it's just fantastic. So everyone here is a designer and uses these design tools. There's great first-class support for Fluent Design already with this first wave. And we're excited to keep supporting you in that way on this. So that's, you know, what's going on with Fluent Design and how you can get started on it. And we wanted to talk about where do we go from here. So I guess, Bo, you want to come back up with me? And this is our, you know, get your cameras ready kind of other stuff you should come see. There's some more live sessions. So right after this one, there's James Clark and I are going to show the code. I didn't show any code this session. So the next session is all coding. We're building a real app together. And you should come check that out. After that, Ashish and Tim are going to go through what's new in XAML and composition and give a really full overview of all the things that's going on there that's awesome and go to the next level of depth on things. After that, today, there's a Windows Ink session that David Abzarian and Shah are giving that'll talk all about this new ink work and the new pen model and the typing, writing into text boxes stuff. And then tomorrow morning, there's Explore Next Generation of Innovation UI in the visual layer, which gets into the next level of depth of cool things like materials and how can you maybe even edit and customize your own materials and cool stuff like that. So you should definitely check out those sessions.
Yeah. And also some of the mini theater sessions, you guys can read these, but come see the work that the apps team has done. We've demoed a little bit of it today, but come and check that out during the mini theater. And the other ones you can read, please take a photo. We have one more slide coming after this. Just some of the locations in the building that are worth checking out. Paul mentioned them earlier. There is a Fluent Design Lounge, the Remix Workshop, as well, and there is a beautiful UX booth on the main floor. Tomorrow, we'll be doing a Channel 9 Live interview as well, so something to pay attention to as well. And then finally, just bringing us to the web and social media, some of the links that we've shared with you just now, and some of the other things that you can check out. There is a little microsite we launched. Developer tools have been updated. You can follow on Twitter. You can tweet about us as well. And then finally, we're launching a LinkedIn group for you as creators to join our network. We want to continue this dialogue with you. As Paul has pointed out a number of times, we want this to be more of a back and forth, to be a co-creation act as we progress through the waves. Okay.
So, thanks.
Yep. That's us for today.
Thank you very much, everyone.